Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about the so-called perimenopause roller coaster, or really the estrogen roller coaster, but we're also going to be touching on progesterone, cortisol, but really just want to explain these estrogen highs and lows and how they can be making you feel, and also what we can do about it. Because if your periods have become horribly heavy and unpredictable, maybe with new flooding, clotting — this is definitely what I'm currently experiencing — maybe your sleep is shot to pieces, you're suddenly wondering if you've got ADHD. This is a really common thing as well in our 40s. I just want you to know that you're not alone. This is essentially perimenopause. It's not about aging, or we tend to talk about perimenopause in terms of declining estrogen. And although I've said this before, but although that happens at the end, towards the later stages of perimenopause, closer to actually getting to menopause, that isn't really what's going on until, like I said, until those later stages. It's more about this hormonal chaos. And that's what we're going to talk about in today's episode. So lots of women, if not most women, will experience some sort of combination of heavy flooding periods, irregular cycles, eventually swollen, tender breasts or painful breasts, anxiety, irritability, sleep disturbances, migraines, and obviously to varying degrees depending on the person. Not everybody's going to feel every single one of these. Not everyone's going to experience them at, you know, really intense levels. So like I say, it's lots, if not most women, but not every woman. And other common symptoms that we start to notice or suffer with, trouble focusing or feeling, particularly in the evening, very tired, but very wired. So you know you're exhausted, you know you want to go to bed, you want to go to sleep, but you're just feeling so wired. And maybe once you're in bed, you can't get rid of that feeling of wiredness, and you're just sort of lying there with thoughts ruminating in your head, and you can't fall asleep straight away or as easily as you used to. And the trouble focusing during the day, particularly, you know, if you're doing maybe focus work like computer work or reading or studying or something like that, you know, anything where it takes a lot of cognitive energy, we can start to notice that we just can't focus like we used to, and we're maybe flitting between tasks. I'm on my computer with so many different tabs open all at once, and I'm just flicking between each tab, just starting this, oh, I'll do that now, and then I'll do this. And I've got all these different things on the go. Whereas in the past, I was much better at just being able to get on with one thing, finishing that, getting on with another, finishing that, and so on. And I felt a lot more, I guess, organized and calm in my day-to-day life and work. But that has kind of switched up a little bit. So if you're noticing things like that, maybe you're noticing that you're feeling less resilient to stress, less kind of tolerant of stressful situations, things that — I'm definitely speaking from my own experience — situations or things that might present themselves in the, that might have presented themselves in the past that you would have just kind of, I guess, taken in your stride a little bit more. Maybe it was something to stress about, but you would have taken it in your stride. And now that's — those same sort of situations can come up in your life, and you can just feel completely unable to deal with these situations. That's definitely something I'm dealing with at the moment. We're having some trouble in the place that we're renting down in Margate. Everything started off okay, and now some stuff's going on. And it's similar stuff that could have gone on in my past, but I'm just finding it really, really, really difficult to deal with it. It's affecting my sort of my mental health, my emotional health, and my physical health all in one. And I'm just getting to that point where I just can't — I'm like, I can't deal with this. So just feeling that less tolerance, less resilient to stressful situations, or even just small things like the dishes piling up, in the sink and you just want to get the kitchen clean so you can sit down for a bit before you go to bed, you know, just really flipping out about that. Whereas in the past, you just say, okay, just get on with it. So those kind of scenarios, if those are familiar to you, they're very common. Starting to feel just not like yourself anymore, which kind of goes with the couple of things I just described. You just kind of start to feel that you're just not yourself. I just don't feel like me anymore. That's very common as well. And you're not alone. It can also be a time when underlying neurodivergent traits start to show up or get diagnosed. So that's really common as well. We can start to, like, I don't believe I would be, for example, diagnosed with ADHD, but I definitely am starting to exhibit some traits that could be, you know, that would go under that that label, I guess, of ADHD. So that can be quite common. And then there can be situations where women would be diagnosed if they went through the process with ADHD, and that has come to light since moving into perimenopause. So everything I just described, these symptoms, experiences, they're not just random. They're not just imagined. There's nothing wrong with you, because a lot of women will start to stress out that there's something, start to worry that there is something wrong with them. Like, what is this? What's going on mentally and emotionally? But there is a physiological, sort of biological reason behind them. And that is essentially perimenopause. So that's what I'm going to explain today. And of course, I've touched on what perimenopause is, what's happening with our hormones. I've talked about this in previous episodes. The episodes, so we're on episode 40 now, but episodes 2, 3, 4, and I think 5, they're all about specifically what's going on in perimenopause with our hormones, with estrogen, progesterone, cortisol, insulin, thyroid. So this is really just me jumping back in to get on with that conversation again, but maybe just in a different way. So yes, this is perimenopause. It's not just getting older. It's not declining estrogen, or that you're nearing menopause itself, depending, some of you might be, but a lot of women are experiencing the sort of things I just described in their early 40s. And they may be thinking, oh, I'm going to menopause now. I must be going into menopause early and my estrogen must be on the floor. But it's not necessarily that for those women. It's that your hormones are shifting. They're shifting so much that it's just creating this mental, physical, and emotional roller coaster. So estrogen is so unpredictable. Progesterone is stepping back from the show. And then cortisol levels are jumping up to further stir the pot and make things even worse. So that's essentially what is going on. What's really occurring during perimenopause, particularly, so let's say you're somebody, for example, who, because menopause itself is 12 months without a period, no periods at all for 12 months, you have hit menopause. And then from that day onwards, you're in postmenopause. Anything before that, you're in perimenopause. But of course, perimenopause, we're moving into it from sort of late 30s, early 40s. So it's a very long phase. So we can't say that every single woman in perimenopause is going to, you know, is at the same stage of what's going on with their hormones, because it does evolve. Estrogen tends to start its decline closer towards us reaching that point of menopause. So once menstrual cycles start to become longer apart, further and further apart, and more irregular. Let's say you're skipping cycles now, or you skip one cycle, you skip two cycles, you have one every 2 months, one every 3 months, or one every 4 months, and so on. The longer apart they become, the more likely that is when your estrogen is declining and declining and declining, until you eventually go 12 months without having a period. That's when estrogen will just be at its lowest point. At that point, you've hit menopause, your ovaries are no longer producing any levels of estrogen or progesterone anymore, and you're in postmenopause with very low levels of estrogen. Before that, depending on what phase, you know, what stage you're at, but kind of, let's say definitely early to mid 40s, perimenopause is a situation of high estrogen and very fluctuating estrogen. So when I say high, I'm talking about levels up to 3 times higher than they've ever been for some women. And then they're also fluctuating erratically. And that's what's also going alongside that is consistently low and falling progesterone levels. So it's this imbalance between these two hormones that creates these symptoms and experiences that I've just described. So what's causing this super high estrogen? So this is down to a hormone called inhibin. So you may or may not have heard of that hormone, but it plays a big role in this estrogen roller coaster, why our levels are spiking really high at this point in our life. So before entering perimenopause, this hormone inhibin acts as a regulatory brake, if you like, on the pituitary gland in the brain, which is the gland that controls the release of FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, which encourages the ovaries to release estrogen. So before we entered perimenopause, this inhibin was regulating the pituitary gland's signal to release follicle stimulating hormone. But when inhibin levels start to fall, which happens as we move into perimenopause, that braking regulatory mechanism becomes less effective. And now FSH levels rise quite significantly. And that elevated FSH creates a distinctive hormonal sort of pattern where multiple follicles are recruited and then stimulated simultaneously, so all at the same time, rather than the typical single dominant follicle that's stimulated in regular reproductive cycles. So what it means is regular reproductive cycles can now become cycles where this increased follicular activity from this increased FSH stimulation triggers more estrogen production, more and more. So this mechanism hopefully helps to explain the hormonal volatility that we experience in perimenopause. Because like I said, we have these high levels of estrogen, but we also have this erratic roller coaster. So very high levels, very low levels. So it's kind of, if you picture a roller coaster with all these loops, it's like adding a whole other loop. Once we move into perimenopause, adding this whole other loop onto the roller coaster that causes women to experience symptoms of high estrogen and low estrogen all within the same week, the same month. So this is where there's some confusion where women they're experiencing, let's say, hot flushes, and they're thinking, well, that's a typical symptom of estrogen deficiency, so my estrogen must be low. But then they're also experiencing, you know, heavy flooding periods, breast pain, mood swings, irritability, and that's your typical symptoms of having high estrogen. So they can get really confused, and what's going on? Have I got high estrogen? Have I got low estrogen? And then they might go and test it. But if they're only testing estrogen on one particular day at one point in time, we just don't know if that's a true reflection of your overall levels of estrogen, or is it just what they were doing in that moment? So that's, you know, that can be quite confusing. So just understand that what's going on is you're having very high levels of estrogen, actually, until the later stages of perimenopause, closer to getting to menopause. And then you also have this roller coaster. Even later, when we get closer to menopause and estrogen is genuinely on its decline, we still do have the erratic nature of it. We're still on the roller coaster. It's just we're on the roller coaster with lower levels. That's the difference. But when we're on the roller coaster with really high levels, the drops, you know, the highs are higher, the drops are lower. So therefore we get more symptoms of high, more symptoms of low, just more pronounced, more intense. So these erratic estrogen patterns, they create these unpredictable cycles and unpredictable periods. So we don't know what kind of period we're going to get. It could be a really horrible one that's just so heavy and flooding and clotty and painful, or it might be okay, might not be that heavy, you know, then the next month again. So they become unpredictable. We don't know what we're going to be faced with. And our cycles can start to become irregular later. What happens at the first sort of earlier stages of perimenopause is that your cycles will start to shorten, whether it's by 1 day, 2 days, anywhere between sort of 1 and 5 days, they start to shorten. And then they'll then start to go back up maybe to where they were, and then go longer. So you'll have longer, shorter cycles first, and then they'll start to become longer until eventually you're going 12 months without having one at all. And that's menopause. But like I said, you know, we know now this is taking maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years. Who knows? Depends on the person. So basically, the accumulative effect of this kind of double dose of estrogen, this whole new roller coaster loop, and this erratic nature of it, can then result in overstimulation of the cells in the endometrial lining, so the lining of the uterus, causing it to overthicken throughout the parts of the month, resulting in very heavy flooding once your bleed starts. The second thing it can cause is breast tenderness or breast pain due to a high presence of estrogen receptors in the breast tissue. These additional estrogen receptors are basically proteins that estrogen combine to that causes the cells in the breast tissue to respond to the hormone and grow or proliferate. So essentially we're just having more dense tissue in the breast that can be tender, swollen, and painful. The third thing it's causing is that the drops in the estrogen roller coaster directly impact the production of your brain chemicals, neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. Now, estrogen can increase dopamine. So when estrogen's in good levels, we should have good levels of dopamine, which is our feel-good brain chemical. It helps with mood, it helps with focus, motivation. So when estrogen levels take this sharp dip in this erratic roller coaster, so do our dopamine levels, potentially amplifying or unmasking ADHD-related traits. So basically, dopamine and serotonin, they're two very key brain chemicals and neurotransmitters that are involved in focus, attention, like I said, motivation, regulation of mood, memory, our memory recall, and emotional balance. Serotonin is also important for sleep because it's the precursor hormone to melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. So when we're making healthy levels of melatonin at nighttime, it helps us to have a restorative sleep where we can fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed. So there's a significant impact here with all of this hormonal and brain chemical shift. And then we also have the fact that cortisol, as I mentioned at the beginning, where estrogen is so erratic and changing, the brain is stressed out by this. Cortisol levels increase when, which is our stress hormone, and also with the steady drop in progesterone, that also increases cortisol levels because progesterone is very calming, anti-anxiety. It sort of helps to stabilize the nervous system, and when we don't have that very sort of nervous system protecting hormone, we end up with more cortisol, more stress. So even if we don't necessarily have more stress in our life, we can start to feel more stressed because we have more cortisol doing its thing. Whether somebody has very high levels of cortisol, very low levels of cortisol, it doesn't neither here nor there. It will kind of just create this dysregulation essentially in cortisol and make us feel more stressed. And like I said, less tolerant to stress, less resilient to stress. But the thing is, we don't just have to deal with it. This all sounds really daunting and really horrible. And like we're talking about quite a lengthy period of time here. It doesn't have to be like this. We don't just have to deal with it. When we start supporting our body with better sleep, for example, with the right nutrients that we might just need more of now than we did before, with stress management practices, things really can start to level out. They do start to level out. I see this in my practice all the time. I see it with myself. And the chaos doesn't feel so overwhelming or intense. So lifestyle habits and our nutrition, they have a really big impact on the estrogen roller coaster, on those highs and lows, how high they go, how low they go, how intense it feels. They have such a big impact on that. So we can sort of taper, if that's the right word, like taper that roller coaster so it's just not as crazy. And of course, my entire podcast show is about what you can do to support yourself. And there's individual episodes on my, for example, my four foundational pillars, which is blood sugar balance and nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise. Those are the four foundational pillars. So I've got individual episodes on all of those, as well as the further things that we can be doing once those foundations are in place. I've got individual episodes on those as well. So do just look through, like I said, this is episode 40. So go back and look through all of the others. I just didn't think before recording which exact ones, but they're definitely all there. I've got a couple of different episodes on cortisol and stress, so go to those as well. And this is, of course, exactly what I take my one-to-one clients through and what my Midlife Thrive program is. That was previously called Empowered Perimenopause Program. It's now been renamed to Midlife Thrive. And this is what I take my clients through, whether one-to-one or through the program. Obviously, the one-to-one work is very personalized to you and what you actually need. And we go through those foundational pillars together, and then we look at all the other things that might be needed or not. Go through all of the episodes. And of course, if you want to reach out to me about working with me one-to-one, then do. You can book a discovery call and we can talk that through. But let me now go through some practical, empowering support tips that you can take away from today's episode. So really kind of nutshelling them. We want to be prioritizing. So I'm kind of just, when I say I'm nutshelling them, I'm just thinking about the most effective, quick results, quick relief, the most effective ones that give you the quickest relief and the simplest ones as well. But if we're not doing these things, no amount of fancy herbs or fancy supplement, you know, perimenopause blends and all this is really going to help if you're not doing these things. So prioritizing sleep and looking after your circadian rhythm. It might sound easier said than done. A lot of people will roll their eyes. I can't prioritize sleep. I've got this and this, or I've got young kids, or I've got to be up at five, or whatever it might be. But what's really important is circadian rhythm support. So that is essential. And that's basically one of the most key ways to do that is aiming for a consistent bedtime and wake up time across 7 days a week. That is the most effective way to regulate your circadian rhythm. Preferably that go to bed time is, you know, before, let's say 11 o'clock or around, before or around 11 o'clock. So ideally 10, 10:30, 11. We just don't want to be pushing that out past midnight. That's when we're disrupting our circadian rhythm, because past midnight is not a time where the circadian rhythm expects that we would still be awake. And then getting up at the same time, ideally not using an alarm, not needing an alarm. I know, again, that's easier said than done. I have always needed an alarm to wake me up until randomly about during lockdown, the first one, so about 4 or 5 years ago, I just managed to regulate my circadian rhythm. Lockdown just really gave me that opportunity because there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. And I've kept that going now, and I've not used an alarm to wake me up in about 4 or 5 years. So we can get to that point if we really put the work into regulating our circadian rhythm. So yeah, ideally waking up and getting up at the same time, trying not to stay in bed once we've woken up or snooze, because that just really impacts this cortisol awakening response that we're supposed to have first thing in the morning. As soon as we wake up, within sort of 30 to 60 minutes, we're supposed to have a very healthy cortisol awakening response. So that's a production of cortisol. And we're going to dull that, or we're not going to allow that to happen if we stay in bed and, you know, stay in darkness, don't go out and see daylight, and we just snooze. So that's the first thing. And then, like I just said, get up and get into daylight. So if you've got a garden, a patio, a balcony, if you can just get straight outside into that for sort of 5 to 10 minutes, even with cloud cover, stay out a little bit longer if there's cloud cover. You don't need to be staring at the sun. You just need to expose your eyes to the morning light, natural light. So maybe you can have your tea out there, or your lemon water in the morning. And just stay out there, maybe do some stretching, whatever you can do, some gentle movement. Or if you can go out straight away, just put some clothes on and go for a walk, then do that. That would be great. If you cannot go out for a walk and you don't have any outdoor space, you can open a window and kind of stick your head out. But again, you kind of want to do that for like 5, 10 minutes. So ideally going out would be better. And then, you know, start getting yourself ready for your day. That is the most key way to regulate your circadian rhythm. And that has such a big impact on obviously your sleep, but also your energy levels, fatigue levels throughout the day, helps regulate your blood sugar, and helps just regulate your cortisol and help you become more resilient to stress at a time when we're just not. Then focusing on blood sugar balance is so important. So no skipping meals, having protein with every single meal, at least 30 grams, if not 40 grams of protein with every single meal, particularly breakfast. So many women are very low on protein first thing in the morning, or they're having maybe just 10 grams because they're having a couple of eggs. We really want to up that to 30 or 40 grams first thing in the morning. I say first thing, ideally it's within an hour of waking, maybe an hour and a half at the most, but we shouldn't be pushing our first meal of the day to sort of 10, 11 o'clock. I know there is so many mixed messages out there on, you know, intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating. A lot of the research has been done on men. And, you know, for when it comes to the way our hormones are behaving in perimenopause, the body does become so much more sensitive to fasting, far less resilient to fasting. And actually, one of the most important things we can be doing is getting that protein dose in within an hour or so of waking up in the morning, and then having that next meal, you know, 4 to 5 hours later, the next meal 4 to 5 hours later, eating all of our food within a 12-hour window and having a 12-hour fast between finishing dinner and starting breakfast the next day. That is wonderful. We can extend that fast overnight to sort of 13, 14 hours. But as long as it's minimum 12, then that's good too. So some key nutrients to focus on would definitely be magnesium glycinate. Magnesium is great anyway in all its different forms, apart from oxide. Oxide is the form I would avoid. It's not very well absorbed. It's a very cheap form. So if you see supplements that have got magnesium oxide, I would avoid those. So magnesium malate is great for energy. Magnesium citrate, been shown to be helpful for stimulated bowel movements. Magnesium 3 and 8 is really great. That sort of works in the brain. It's a more expensive, less easy to come by form. But magnesium glycinate is my absolute favorite because it works on the nervous system. It really helps to support stress. It supports a good night's sleep. It doesn't make us drowsy. We can take it any time of the day, but it works on all of those things. So I love that form. So I personally, myself, I take magnesium glycinate about a couple of 100 milligrams every morning, and then I take about 400 milligrams, 300 to 400 every night before I go to bed. And I've been using that religiously for years, and I will not be without it. And then B vitamins, particularly B12, B6 and folate, which is B9. We want to avoid folic acid in supplements. The best, most bioavailable or well-absorbed form is folate as opposed to folic acid. So those three, B12, B6 and B9, they really are so key for hormone production, hormone balance, but also for energy levels. B6, folate, B12, they're very helpful for our body's detoxification of estrogen, the different pathways in the liver that do that, which is going to be very helpful to, again, to help taper that estrogen roller coaster. Omega-3s, so that's your EPA and DHA fatty acids, which are found in oily fish. We can get some from algae, but oily fish is the most potent form. So things like salmon, mackerel, anchovies, herring, sardines. I just love using tinned sardines, tinned mackerel, so easy. Throw them into salads, throw them into pesto pasta dishes. You know, have them on a piece of rye toast or spelt sourdough, something like that for a snack. So really easy to get those in. Smoked salmon in scrambled eggs or omelets, have a salmon steak a couple of times a week, some prawns, good quality prawns. So these omega-3s are really helpful for reducing inflammation. They've also been shown to support mood, support against with aggression as well. So these are things that can become problematic for us during this mad roller coaster. So also things like body aches and pains, right? So it's all about inflammation, high cortisol, dysregulated cortisol. It's all about increasing inflammation. So these omega-3s become really important at helping to manage those inflammatory pathways in the body. So that's omega-3 from EPA and DHA specifically. So yeah, I mean, I've mentioned protein, how important it is for blood sugar regulation. That is one of the most foundational pieces of everything. But also protein is important for the production of our neurotransmitters, our brain chemicals like dopamine, serotonin, melatonin, because protein breaks down into different amino acids. And all of those amino acids are basically like building blocks or raw materials for us to be able to make those neurotransmitters, which we really need. And also what's really helpful is checking ferritin levels, checking B12 as well, checking folate if possible, checking vitamin D, seeing what your levels are. Are they deficient? Do you need to supplement with good quality supplements or increase, you know, food sources, for example, of B12 if you're not eating enough animal foods, or ferritin if you're not eating enough animal sources of iron? So check ferritin, because these are all, especially if you have very heavy periods, which is very common now. Ferritin, so low ferritin, low stores of iron basically can cause heavy periods, and vice versa. The heavy periods are going to deplete us of iron as well. So check your ferritin and your iron. And really, really important is supporting your stress response. So I've said, you know, I've explained that we become less tolerant, less resilient to stress. And that is because this increase or dysregulation in cortisol is adding fuel to the hormonal fire that's already in place with this estrogen roller coaster. So, and again, because of the low progesterone. So really important, over and above anything, is supporting that stress response, supporting our brain and our body to deal with stressful situations, not just stressful situations, but day-to-day life. So I'm going through a stressful situation at the moment with our home, some stuff's going on, but that will pass. I'm hoping it's going to pass like within a week. And that's an acute stressor, which I'm finding really difficult to deal with at the moment, because of being in perimenopause. But I'm doing the best I can to support myself. But then we also have just day-to-day stressors. So we really want to be supporting ourselves with that, because everything, like I said, even just having dishes piling up at night in the sink can become really stressful. And we can really flip out about that, whereas we just wouldn't before. So we have to be supporting our nervous system. And essentially that means supporting the brain. So there's nutrients to support the brain, like omega-3s, protein, hydration, good sleep. But we also want to tell the brain that we're safe, that although all of this is going on around me, although the dishes are piling up, although the kids are, you know, demanding this, that and the other, although there's stuff going on in the home, I'm fine and I'm safe. You don't, you know, you're basically telling the brain everything's safe, everything's okay. We can regulate cortisol. We don't have to flip out. This is what we're sort of telling the brain with various practices like breath work, setting boundaries, saying no when we mean no instead of saying yes when we mean no. Letting people know, I'm not doing this, I am doing this, I'm available for this, I'm not available for this. You can't just do this. You know, setting boundaries is so, so important. And essentially just that nervous system regulation, like I said, the breath work. So 4-6 breathing a couple of times a day, just for 3 to 5 minutes, breathing into a count of 4, breathing out to a count of 6. Taking any kind of guided meditation that you might have on an app. I love using Insight Timer. I use the free version. There's lots of lovely short guided meditations that I use there. Lying down whenever you can throughout the day, if you're working at home, if you're in a position to be able to just lay down and listen to a yoga nidra body scan meditation, also known as non-sleep deep rest. This is shown to be very restorative for the nervous system. Gentle yoga, some slow vinyasa flow, some hatha yoga, whether it's for 10 minutes at home, whether you get to a class for 60 minutes, whatever it might be, I do 10 minutes here and there at home. Walks in nature, plenty of time in nature throughout the week where possible. All of these things have been shown to regulate the nervous system, and they will all have an accumulative effect at calming the nervous system, which then has this compound effect on energy, sleep, mood, periods, breast pain, literally everything really helps to calm that estrogen roller coaster. So I hope these have been helpful and practical, and they're things that you can say, right, okay, yeah, I know now why this is really important and I've been putting this off and I need to just do it. So I really hope these things have been helpful. I also forgot to mention what's really helpful is Qigong as well. So you can just look on YouTube for some simple Qigong practices. I've got one that I found on YouTube, which is like 9 minutes. And I tend to do that most mornings out on my, we have a little terrace where I lived before, we had a little garden. So I just go out into the garden, because you don't need a mat or anything. You just need to stand up and do it. Or even just throughout the day, again, if you're working from home, if you're in a position to be able to just stop for 5 minutes and just do a little bit of Qigong that you might, that you'll learn on YouTube, things like that. Very, very helpful. So to wrap up, perimenopause isn't the beginning of the end. It isn't like, you know, something where we need to just think, oh my God, I've entered into the most horrible phase of life. All this stuff I'm learning about it and it's awful. It isn't. It's a time of powerful change. It's a time to take control, set boundaries, and do the things you know you should be doing to support your body. And hopefully that's what my podcast is helping you with, to know what you should, you know, what you could be doing. And when you understand what's happening and then you support your body, you can feel better and feel more in control and have a much greater time and actually enjoy your transition to menopause. It's definitely something I'm doing and trying to do, and then teach as I go along the way. So I hope this has been helpful. Please share the episode with a friend who might need to hear this, if you have anyone who does, or a family member. And if you have, I say this at the end of every episode and I mean it, if you have any specific questions, any topics you'd like me to cover on future episodes, please drop me an email. It's francesca@francescaliparotti.com. You can also find my website and contact me through there, or find me on Instagram at perimenopausenutritionist_FL. And if you want to explore working with me one-to-one, you can book a free discovery call. The link is in the show notes or on my website, and I would love to talk to you there. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.